chairing this meeting on behalf of the newly elected chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Defence, Mr. Benjamin Thuli, who put his apology he had to go this meeting.
Thank you, sir.
Before I ask the members to introduce themselves, can I ask Mr. Tomo, normally it is practiced at this event, the annual report of the Arms Corps, that the CEO as well as the chair of the board are present. Mr. Molefe, Dr. Molefe, do you have any word on why Dr. Molefe, is he late, is he coming? Apologize the presence of Mr. Dr. Molefe as the chair of the Arms Corps Board.
Chairperson, I just convey the same message to the Secretary of Defense, who will make the same inquiry. Dr. Molefe has indicated that he was not able to join this meeting today because he's also a board member, I think, of Petro SA, and I think they're having a board meeting today, and he's also chairman of that board. And he has asked me to convey his apologies.
The Secretary of Defense, do you want to say something? And members?
No comment, except to say perhaps if there may have been one or other board member then in his place, then that would have sufficed at least. But the meeting is in progress already. So I don't think there's anything we can do about that for now.
Thank you. I would appreciate if we can just make it a standing rule that normally with the Arms Corps annual report, normally the CEO and the chair of the board at the minimum are present when they appear before Parliament. This is your highlight. This is the flagship of the department, not the department, of Arms Corps, to present to the highest else in the country, and I would think it's just appropriate if we can make prior arrangements then if a person cannot attend. But we regret that the chair of Arms Corps, Dr. Molefe, is not present, just for the record. Members, can I ask you to introduce yourself very briefly? Mr. Shah, will you start?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Rafiq Shah, member of this committee. Thank you.
Henrik Schmidt, member of the committee.
Manish Kumar, member of this committee.
Member of the committee.
Henry Fahle, member of the committee.
Member Batanyos, member.
Thank you, members. Then we can start and say welcome again to Arms Corps and all the members of the media, as well as members of the staff of this committee. And the department. Mr. Tomo, before I hand the floor to you, we're looking forward. I see the program says it's a briefing by Arms Corps for 30 minutes and then a questioning by the committee, Portfolio Committee on Defense. Before I hand over to you, let me just highlight from the chair certain issues that we will be looking for in your presentation. I know you look at the performance measures, especially in your presentation, which is very important, the critical performance areas that you're going to give a feedback. But I hope you will also address some of the following critical issues. The whole issue of the restructuring of Arms Corps, I think it's a matter that lies very close to the heart of this committee. Unfortunately, we have not been briefed up to date in any aspect of the transformation of restructuring of Arms Corps. So maybe you would take note to address that issue. Then in your report on corporate governance, in your annual report under your signature, there's a number of issues that you may want to address. The one is the grievance issue of the general manager of corporate affairs. That was a long-standing issue at the time of writing the report. The Vistula investigation that you've mentioned in your report. We would also like you to address the issue of the funding of arms school. You made remarks in your report on that. Obviously, you will discuss important issues like the defense industrial participation. In the report, very clearly came out the whole issue of the delay of the Airbus 400M. And then, under your review of operations, surely you're going to address issues like the acquisition objectives, the whole issue of the Rooivalk helicopter, and in your report, you also addressed the Project Hoefeister, which is the infantry combat vehicle, as well as the arms corps business. And surely in your presentation you will address one of the major issues is your performance against goals. From your strategic plan to your annual report to your budget, and the three documents talk to one another. And lastly, just your plans for the future against this background. Why I mention the plans for the future, you would recall that in the last two Auditor General reports, the Auditor General has not given you a clean bill of health and to say it's unqualified report, but he did mention twice, if I remember correctly, emphasis of matter, and that was a going concern for Arms Corps to carry on against the background of the restructuring for two consecutive years. So hopefully you will address that as well. Just as a background, from some of the issues, members may ask questions on wider aspects of this, but this is some of the issues that we hope will come through in your presentation on your annual report. Because we're not only looking at your performance against goals, we're looking at other issues, like I've mentioned, that we also need to be informed. And last, we are not here to only to oversee the Arms Corps as a proud state entity of the DOD. We are here also to assist you in any way that we can assist as legislators, in that you may highlight to us and say, we need your assistance, we need your support, we need your intervention. We are here not us and you, it's we. We're from the same family. And against that background, I gladly hand the floor to you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Without wasting any time, let me kick off by taking you through what we have prepared today in terms of sharing with the portfolio committee. And obviously, we will also address the issues that the Chairperson has highlighted that we and the committee would like us to cover. I'm going to kick off by giving the committee an overview of the year under review. And then from there my colleagues are going to then give a presentation on our balance sheet, and then our consolidated income statement, and then our financial performance, and then the three activity areas of Arms Corps, namely Arms Corps Corporate with the Naval Dockyard Samostan and Arms Corps Business. And then from there, we are going to cover the performance against our goals, the goals that we set ourselves at the beginning of the year under review. And then we were also planning to give answers to regarding some of the questions that were raised to us last year when we presented our annual report around this time. So let me start by looking at the overview. As the chairman has correctly pointed out, last year Arms Corps got an unqualified report, but there was a matter of emphasis relating to the going concern position of Arms Corps. This year, the situation is exactly the same. Our our audit report is unqualified, but the issue of a going concern is still there because it has not been finalized by the end of the financial year. And then there's also the issue of the investigation of the transformation of AMSCO. The committee will recall that there was this issue where the minister has asked that AMSCO business be separated from AMSCO and formed into a dairy by combining AMSCO business and OTB in Denel and DPSS in the CSIR. Those were going to be combined into a dairy. And then the remainder, which is AMSCO corporate, what we call the acquisition arm of AMSCO, the minister wanted it to focus onto the acquisition activities of the DOD. So as far as that is concerned, that is the acquisition aspect, the minister has asked that AMSCO, well, not AMSCO alone, AMSCO, the DOD, the CSIR, and DINEL, form a team and undertake a study to look at what AMSCO should look like, this acquisition part of AMSCO. And that team, that study was done, and comparison was done with similar organizations like AMSCO in the United Kingdom, in Sweden, in Germany, in Australia, and other places like India, at the end of which it was decided that AMSCO should retain its form, that is the acquisition part, should retain its form, nothing should change, and there were issues of whether there should be a board or not, and the recommendations were that there should be a board. It should be also a tender board. And by and large, the recommendation were leave AMSCO as it is, the acquisition part, and then leave the acquisition part of AMSCO as it is, and then change it from Schedule 2 to Schedule 3 or some other schedule that the Treasury will decide on, which will be equivalent to a Schedule 3. That was the acquisition part. And then there was what we call the AMSCO business, which the minister said that one must be migrated out of AMSCO to form a DERI, which is a Defense Evaluation and Research Institute. The minister called for a similar study, which was done and completed, and then the study said indeed the DERI must be formed, it must be located in the Department of Defense, the Department of Defense must fully fund it, it must also be a Schedule 3. And then these were discussed with DINEL and Science and Technology, the CSIR, and then with the DGs of the three departments who accepted the recommendations and made modifications as they deemed fit. These were taken to the ministers approved, especially our Minister of Defense then, who approved that this should happen, and this was presented by the chairman to him. And then subsequently, the chairman asked that the minister should sign his approval to show that so that there's a record of his approval. And subsequently, the minister by that time, the chairman wanted him to sign, the minister had other inputs and wanted certain aspects of the recommendation changed. And he made mention of these in his budget speech in May here in Parliament. And lastly, that related to the dairy should not report to the Ministry of Defense. It should actually report to Science and Technology. And then the chairman has had a few meetings with the minister to try and clarify this issue. But before they could finalize it, the then minister, of Defense resigned, and after he has resigned, this issue has not been finalized with the new minister because we have not had a chance to brief him yet. So that is the transformation situation of AMSCO. On the one hand, the acquisition, and on the other hand, the dairy. And then, as the committee would be aware, AMSCO took over the management of the dockyard from the 1st of September last year. And between that time and the end of the financial year, we have been busy looking at the dockyard to determine what capabilities it has, to determine what capabilities we need to put in place, to set up management structures, to set up the appointment of people. And those issues are what has been occupying us during that period. And currently now we are looking at populating the structures properly and also finalizing the business plan along the lines of which we are going to run the dockyard. And then there are also issues of progress regarding the strategic defense packages. The last three of the four frigates were commissioned and handed over to the SA Navy, and then the four maritime patrol helicopters were also delivered to the Air Force. Seven of the light utility helicopters were delivered, bringing the total to 23. And then the first Gripen dual seat was completed, and the initial flight test program and the second dual seater was also delivered to the Air Force at Makado for ground crew training. And then 21 of the 24 Hawk lead-in fighter aircraft have also been delivered to 85 Combat Flying School. And then also AMSCO, we'd like to report that we've set B targets for ourselves, and we have delivered on those targets. And these targets are continuously being moved. As we achieve them, we set new ones, which are even more stringent than the previous one. And then also, we have set ourselves goals about the affirmative action or transformation of AMSCO on the human resource part. And then those also we have achieved. Now, what we'd like to do is to talk to the committee about the finances, and then and also our performance, and then we will come to some of the issues. We'll come back to some of the issues that the chairperson has raised, which were specific that are not part of this presentation. Mr. Hobler will take us through the financial presentation.
Thank you, Honorable. If we look at the balance sheet for the year under review, we'll find that the position of AMSCO remained stable. There was a growth in the net asset value of the group of 9.4%, and that was mainly due to the surplus that was realized by the company and the group. We do not use any external financing as reflected on the balance sheet itself. If we move forward to the asset side, we'll find that there was also very little movement there. There was an expansion, or not expansion, $28 million invested to maintain the operations, and that was mainly due to IT, to the upgrade of our server environment to the new Blade, General Blade environment, where we basically reduced the number of our servers from 111 to 38. That's the only real movement in the balance sheet on the asset side. If we carry move forward to the income statement, we'll find that for the corporation, it's over two pages there. The revenue for the corporation basically increased with 5% for the transfer payment. Our subsidiaries income reduced for the group. That's the two biggest options, the biggest effect there, as well as defense material disposal, the amount of sales that we have realized, the obsolete material that we sold is reduced quite significantly there. If you see the effect thereof in the net position of the company, you'll find that we've made a $52 million surplus for the year. The biggest portion of that is the retirement benefit, the surplus in the retirement benefit that we've recognized within the company. That was the biggest contributor for the year under review. We'll also look at the different sections when we get to move forward. We'll find that on the defense material disposal side, we made a significant decrease or loss from the previous year, from the 6.2 revenue that we generated the previous year to a $15 million loss for the current year. But we'll get to the different reasons for that if we move forward. if I can then take the committee through the different sections, I'm going to look at Omsport Corporate first. You will find that for the period under review, there was a significant surplus for the corporate side. Like I said, that was mainly the surplus in the post-retirement medical benefit that we realized, as well as some savings or under expenditure on vacancies not being filled and the time delay it takes to fill those vacancies. That is the biggest portion of that. You'll find that income, like I said, the increase of 5%, the transfer payment, that's the standard transfer payment increase that we get. We did also get some additional financing income from interest on our cash reserves that we've got currently. If you look at the Nail Dockyard Simonstown, you'll find that there was a actual surplus of 7.8 against the budgeted of 2.3 for the period under review. That was also mainly due to some additional interest received on the transfer payment received, as well as some savings on contract workers that were not appointed during the period under review. On the Omsco business side, we found that there was a deficit of 4.6 compared to the budgeted surplus of 9.1, and that was mainly due to the reduced turnover for the period under review. There are also some, if you look on the next page, there are also some comments on reasons for the turnover decrease. Personnel cost also decreased with 14 million for the period under review for vacancies not filled, and they had a negative surplus in retirement of 6 million as effect with their personnel cost. That's basically an overview of the financial position of the company. I would then like to take the committee through the goals that were set for the corporation and that was also agreed as in the shareholders' compact with the minister. The first one is the establishment and implementation of a capability management model. We've indicated the performance there must be fully deployed to the goal by 1st of September 2007, indicating the first two phases were completed. Integration of the system development to the business register has been completed. What this system now enables us to do is to gain information resource loading as well as allocation of the elements to the business to make sure that we allocate the correct people to the task or the requirement from the DoD. This goal was not completely achieved and we've indicated the 97% completion in this goal. If we then move forward to the second goal, it's the ISO audits. We are also subject to the ISO 9001 audits, and the goal was that we must maintain our listing and that we do not have any significant findings. According to the audits being performed, there's been no major deviations found, and we therefore say we've got 100% achievement in that regard. The next goal is the establishment of a naval ship support agency to be completed by the 31st of August 2007. What we've indicated there is that it's been established in the Simonstown Naval Base. We are now basically there. We've got the three different parties there, and we're trying to render a better service to the SA Navy currently, and we say we've got 100% completion there. The following is the improve the tool to be integrated with the DAPD baseline approval data, capability management, job description, link the tool to project government management system. That's a work authorization system that we need to implement where we are tasked to do the work, where we task in-house, task the people to do the work. You'll find that we've got some restraints in that regard. We're also waiting for the contract management system that we're busy developing. And subject to that, we were not able to complete the task. Therefore, we say we've got a 95% completion. The following goal is the approved learnerships by CETA and quality assurance. That was to have implement the learnership by 31st of August 2008. What we say there is that the learnership has been submitted to the South African Qualifications Authority and we're now waiting the registration thereof and the approval thereof. It's a postgraduate in defense research that was proposed to them. So we've just indicated a 90% completion in that regard. The next goal is to establish the baseline for quality assurance competency, develop and implement competency management model. That's similar to the acquisition, on the acquisition side, just for the quality. We say it must be implemented by the 31st of March 2008 to match the quality requirements to the specific task that is supposed to be done. We've basically achieved that, and the model was developed and implemented, and we say we've got 100% completion in that regard. Following one is the sales turnover to be reached set at 90% of sales plan. This is specific with regard to the sale of obsolete and redundant defense material. What we say there, the goal was 90% of the sales plan that we had to achieve, and the sales plan was 123.7 million, and therefore the target 111 million. This is one target that we did not achieve. We only achieved 16.4 million. Factors that influenced our performance there was the approval process that was changed, and that also caused some delays. There was also some restrictions imposed on the sale of SAML vehicles due to it being reclassified as a controlled item, and therefore it needs a NCACC approval before it can be sold. There was also the problem with regard to SNDF vehicles that needs to be native registered to be driven on normal roads that... And that was a problem. And then as well as some vehicles being donated, and therefore we did not realize any sales on those specific issues. Yes. What we have to say is that we did process approximately 209 stock lists and 132 transfer lists that we received from Chief of Logistics and Lock Support Formation. These are one of the targets, like I previously said, we did not achieve. We then move forward to the dockyard takeover. The first one, the first goal was the takeover by 1st of April 2007. We said that the transfer took place on the 1st of September 2007 due to a court interdict, and we felt that we did achieve 100% on that issue. The second part of that was the consolidation phase to be completed, and that consists of three components. The first one is the staff takeover, which we said took place on the 1st of September when we took over the dockyard. The second one is the HR processes and systems rollout. Those systems are being provided from head office currently, as well as local support from the dockyard itself. And then the third portion of that was the business plans update, and we said that the plan has been developed and its process of being approved. It also incorporates the reorganization plan. Based on that, we've only indicated a 95% performance on that specific issue. The following part of the record is the reorganization plan to be developed by the 31st of August 2008. That should also include commercialization plans and associated business plans that should have been developed. We were in discussion with a company, MBDA, to develop those business plans that would have been part of the record to assist us to... as part of also of the debt obligation, but that was not completed. If we then move to the fifth Defense Industrial Participation Program, the goal set there was that we should have allowed or approved credit to the value of 1.2 billion by 31st of March, and we've actually approved or for credits to the amount of 1.4 billion that we actually approved for the period under review. Then on AMSCO's external audit report, the goal was that we should not have more than three audit report matters after the final audit exercise by the Auditor General. We've indicated that there was no material weaknesses identified by the Auditor General in our control systems. We also received an unqualified report, and there were no significant matters identified. There was only one negative matter in the Auditor General's report, and that reflected or referred to government matters, and that basically just referred to the fact that they proposed some disclosure changes from the statements that we sent to them on the 31st of May compared to the final audit report. But we also discussed that it was basically on the related parties and other debtors, the disclosure and notes that they've changed or requested to be changed, and that was done for the report. But we felt there is 100% completion on that. Then we got our BEE objectives. The first one is on 50% spending BEE on operating budget. What we indicated there is a 59.43% actual performance, and the amount spent on B companies was 21.8 million. So we've actually exceeded our objective. The second portion is the spending on the special defense account and general defense account. There the target being set is 25%, and the actual achievement was 26.28% compared to the 25%. So we also indicate that we've exceeded our objective. The third portion of the BE spending is on the Arms Corps business side, where the goal was 40% of discretionary cost, and the actual spending there was 48.07% that we achieved, and the amount was 57 million. Then we've also had a goal regarding energy savings in support of the cabinet initiative. The goal was that we should conform 90% to the energy savings plan by 31st of March. We've upgraded our energy management system to be able to manage energy demand, our peak demand, to make sure that we don't exceed that, because there's penalties if we exceed that. We also installed an air conditioning management system, because the air conditioning is our biggest cost driver within the Arms Corps building. We also implemented our lighting control. Those are just three of the major or the biggest portions. In the annual report, there are also some other issues included. What we say with the impact of those energy savings initiatives, we were able to have a reduction of 6.9% in maximum peak demand and 14.1% in energy consumption compared to the 2005 baseline that was set. So there we also indicated 100% achievement. Then we moved to the human resources goals, and that's to improve the demographic profile of Arms Corps. The first one is at least 80% of all external appointments from the black population groups. Our actual achievement is 90.91% from black population groups. So there we indicated exceeding of the objective. The second portion of that is that 20% of external appointments in the technical functional groups to be women, and we achieved 20% in that regard. The third one is that 65% of all external appointments in the non-technical functional groups to be women. That's the one goal that we did not achieve. We only achieved 63.83%. The fourth portion thereof is the 29% of employees in the supervisory levels and above to be women. We indicated 29.07% of employees in the STS supervisory, that's what we deem to be supervisory level, were women. So that's 100% achievement. Then as part of the human resources, it was bursaries to be granted to the tertiary level students. It was also one of the objectives we did not achieve. We only granted 4 students. Subsequent to the year end, we actually reviewed our bursar program to see what was the problem for, or some of the reasons for not achieving, and we made some changes to the bursar scheme. Since then, we've awarded 9 bursars to 1 male African, 4 African females, and 4 Indian females, all in engineering. Then, still on human resources, the talent development program that we have, where we actually allow people to get some experience within Arms Corps. The goal was to have 12 trainees under the talent development scheme, and we actually had 15 people during the talent development school program during the period under the deal. That's in regard to the goals. I would like to take the committee through some of the previous questions raised by the committee, if I can proceed with that. The first one was just a remark regarding the audit committee report and to structure that in regard to treasury. What we say is we actually implemented all the changes in the current annual report. The second one was what the chairman also touched previously, to say that we had an emphasis on matter by the auditor general regarding the going concern principle. what we say is that that principle will, or that remark will remain until the transformation has been completed. I do not feel it's actually serious enough to qualify the financial statements, so they just refer the reader that there is some issues regarding going concern, and they refer the reader to where it's been addressed in the annual report. Then on the third issue, there was a need by the portfolio committee to have a detailed presentation on the strategic facilities within, both in DOD and Arms Corps. What we basically indicated there is that the presentation was, according to our knowledge, not done up to date. What we've indicated here is some of the strategic facilities that we do manage on behalf of the DOD, and we've indicated that those are capabilities which the DOD guard is essential for their mandate. The first one being the dockyard, just indicating some what the dockyard is doing, the repair authority responsible for the upkeep of the SA Navy fleet. The number of personnel involved is 374, and the budget of the dockyard is 98.5 million. The second one being Geratech, located in Pretoria, West Pretoria. The core business being accredited automotive and related test facility to ensure that components, products, and systems procured conform to the military specifications. The number of personnel there is 48, and the budget is 24.8 million for Geratech. Alcantan is located in Prisca. It's an oil ballistic test range for artillery, armor, rockets, short-range missiles, mortar, rapid-fire, and anti-aircraft tests. 28 people employed there, and the budget is 27 million. Institute for Maritime Technology is located in Simonstown. It's a multidisciplinary division specializing in defense research, development, testing, and evaluation of maritime systems for the SA Navy. 79 people employed there, and the budget is 29 million. The next one is ProTechnique Laboratories. It's in Eiffel Park, Centurion. It's an applied chemistry laboratory which performs chemical and biological research and development work for the DOD in decontamination, detection, protection, synthesis, verification, and biomedical. 26 people employed there. Their budget is 11.4 million. For hazmat protective systems, also in Eiffel Technopark Centurion, manufactures impregnated activated carbon, which is used in comprehensive range of filter cartridges, canisters, silicon half mask respirators. It's also being manufactured for the DOD. The number of personnel is 11, and the budget of them is 2.5 million. The Defense Institute is situated in the Arms Corps office, or located in the Arms Corps head office itself. It assists with impartial integrated decision support and short, medium, and long-term decisions required by the DOD. 29 people employed there, and the budget is 21.6 million. Then we've got Flamengo. Sorry, there's just on this slide, there's just a mistake there. The force of four, which they are also located in the Arms Corps head office. They are computer-aided engineering, soft and hardware ballistic simulation, modeling, analysis, and verification. The number of people is only four. Quite a high skilled people working there. The budget is 3.7, and that's mainly due to the expensive computer system and software that they use for those simulation modeling techniques. Ergotech is also in the Eiffelt Technopark Centurion. They're providing ergonomics services to the DOD, focusing on military ergonomics, research in the areas of soldier perception, anthropometry, soldier functional and physical performance to ensure that the effective and efficient integration of ergonomics in all defense systems. There's 8 people employed there, and the budget is 5.9 million. Then armor development, they're also sitting within the Arms Corps head office. They conduct continued research and development to maintain advanced armor protection technologies. 5 people employed and 3 million budget in that regard. Those were the facilities that we do manage. Then there was also, the next is that there was a remark or a recommendation on that we should have a 5-year plan on skills development. What we say is that we do have the employment equity plan that is a 5-year horizon. We've also implemented a 5-year skills transfer and development plan as part of succession planning, where we look at all employees of 50 years and older, as well as core technical skills categories to make sure that we have proper succession for when those people leave the employ of arms corps. We then also say that all employees have individual development plans, making provision for multi-year development actions. It was also recommended that the report should reflect the position of women in relation to their number, the positions they occupy, the target, in terms of appointing women, whether or not the target was achieved. On page 40 of the annual report, we did include a table including the position of women per race and broadband level. Then in the goals, as discussed previously, we've got specific targets for appointment of women in technical positions, non-technical positions, as well as supervisory and higher positions. And we already went through the achievement of those targets. Then Arms Corps should look at its current relationship with the DoD. I think the CEO did touch already on some issues regarding the structuring of Arms Corps, as well as the investigation into the preferred future corporate form and position of Arms Corps, as well as the issues regarding the dairy implementation. That's basically addressing that specific issue. It was also requested or recommendation that we should have a list of acronyms, and we've complied with the committee's request in that regard, the pages 104 and 106, to make it more easier for the committee to understand the abbreviations used. Then it was requested that we should also detail the number, gender, and categories of employees of Arms Corps. That was also included in page 40 in the table from the human relations plan. Then there was a discussion, or there was a serious concern from the portfolio committee regarding the loss of capabilities from the dairy or the dairy implementation, as well as the loss of income from that group that will move out of the on-school group. I think part of what was discussed of restructuring of on-school is addressing that specific issue, to say that capabilities will move to the dairy but will not be lost to the country. It will just will be located in the dairy, and as well as that, we've also indicated that the focus of those facilities is not to generate profit as such, but it's the research and evaluation facility. There was also a secondary concern regarding minimal progress made in achieving transformation targets, especially regarding women, and it was indicated that additional measures such as purposeful headhunting, early identification of potential employees should be considered. What we indicate today is that we do visit colleges and universities for recruitment and bursar identification. As part of the corporate social investment program of Arms Corps, we're also looking at the promotion of studies in maths and science. We're supporting science olympiads and other science events. We also adopted a school to promote performance specifically in maths and science in that regard. On the transformation issues, I think we included some detail on the appointment from the black population group, as well as from women, what we did with the bursar scheme and the talent development program, also addressing the concern of the portfolio committee. There we just indicated a slide to show what the actual appointment from the black population group was, and for the year under review it was 90%. You'll find that it's just a and for the current year, up to September, we're standing on 92.9%. There is also the target, just again, what the specific target set, but I think we already discussed that when we looked at the goals, the talent and bursars as well. There was also a question submitted on skills losses and shortages that we addressed, what we are currently doing, what the programs that we put in place to address the retention and recruitment of skilled personnel. I think it's just reiterating from what's been said already. We run a bursar scheme for full-time studies in engineering at FA universities. We're supporting the DoD's Department of Defense Technology portfolio, promoting postgraduate studies in science, engineering, and technology through a grant program. We're using assignment to Foreign Project Office as a fast-track development opportunity. Whenever we can do that. We're utilizing the talent development program the newly qualified talent, typically from the designated groups, are employed on a contract basis to gain meaningful work experience in on-school work environment whilst in a formal training program under the guidance of a mentor. We're also using interns from the Umbu program for jobless people to gain work experience with a view of permanent employment. And then we're running programs to promote studies in math and science, where we support the Science Olympiad and science events. And we also use on-school mentorship and coaching programs to develop employees, ensuring that exit interviews are conducted with all employees who resign and that appropriate action is taken to eliminate the controllable reasons for the resignation. The organization's inability to pay market-related remuneration is one of the resignation drivers, and there we've tried to action certain things to be able to remunerate the people, or the employees, on the 50th percentile. We've also implemented a 5-year skill transfer and development plan as part of the succession planning, as previously stated. So, Chair, that's the main presentation. We will then address the additional issues being questioned or raised by the Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tomo, and your team for the presentation. I think, thank you first of all for keeping to the time allocated to you. We appreciate, and I think it's clear cut. You made very clearly the performance against targets, objectives. You presented your financials, the statement, your balance sheet, your income statement. Thank you for including the portfolio committee recommendations on the previous year. I think it's a good improvement. It keeps the golden thread running through our interactions, and also including the concerns raised by the portfolio committee. Members, there you have it. Can I have indication for members who want to ask questions? The questions can be, as I indicated in my introduction, can be wider than what was presented. Most of the issues, not only in the bulk of the report, but also in the section by the CEO, as well as the section by the chairperson of the board, also addresses certain serious issues and important issues in on-school. The floor is open for questions. Mr. Shah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have the following 3 or 4 questions. One, Chairperson, as you had indicated rightly, that the transformation is the process. It's already happening, and Parliament initially was not taken into confidence. We had no insight into exactly what was happening. It was just happening, and then suddenly we heard it's happening. So that's a huge concern, because we have an oversight role to play, and the fact that there probably may have been a need to repeal the Arms Corps Act in the process. And all of this is also happening in the absence of the defense review, which we have not seen. So we don't know whether this transformation of the industry and Arms Corps is in line. Is it speaking to the defense update? That's a huge concern for me. So perhaps you can shed some light on why it is so, and whether it speaks to the defense update. And while we're on the same note, the transformation, are we looking at it only in the South African context? How does it speak to our regional responsibility in terms of SADC? Now, we know we have a standby brigade, and I don't know what the design for design day is. So how does this transformation of the defense industry speak to the region and the continent? I just wanted to have some sense of that. Because it's no use us having a transformation in the industry here. And then you have an obligation, regional and continental obligation, and the next thing you learn is that we don't have the capacity, or what we're producing is not suitable for the needs. So just to get some sense there. I hope I haven't asked a very complicated question. The next question, Chair, is we learned that the Airbus heavy lift transport project has been delayed by about 6 or 7 months. What are the implications thereof for us, given the fact that we're really in need of heavy lift capacity? in view of the fact that we are extensively being involved in peacekeeping. And by the way, these delays, are there any penalties involved there? What are those? If there are, I don't know. And you spoke about the sale of FAMO vehicles and the problem of the new restrictions that have been placed. Now, what are the implications? I'm trying to understand. The NCACC, does it understand the implications? Has it evaluated this situation? What is the position of the NCACC? Have they made any pronouncements, NCACC, about this matter? And what I find strange here, Chairperson, is what informs the decision of the DOD to withdraw vehicles, approximately 40 million rands, they say, and the DMD sales plan includes donating some of these vehicles. Now, I know we have donated the soft-skin vehicles to the Central African Republic at a time when during Operation Bata, Chairperson, if I can have your attention, Chair, during Operation Bata, the reserves were having problems transporting the reserves, and I can't understand why we can have vehicles we can donate to Central African Republic, but our own reserves have a problem transporting themselves during an operation. Now, it doesn't make sense. I just want to understand why such a situation should happen. Finally, with regard to the naval dockyard at Simonstown, we are led to believe that, you didn't meet your targets. Maybe you'll shed some light as to why, but then why did some key partners withdraw? What was the reason behind that, and what is the implications thereof? Why did they withdraw? I think I'll just stop there. I have lots of questions. I don't want to exhaust everything. I'll leave it there. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Daniel?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. On the annual report, the CEO stated that AMCO took over the Simonstown dockyard on the 1st of September last year. But we have been unable to completely manage this. Can you give us the reason why, up to this point, that has been more than a year, if you check that, for one. There's something also that has been mentioned in the annual report on the post-retirement medical benefits. Can they elaborate on this? I'm just interested in understanding how does this happen? Who funds this? How? It's not usual. Thank you,
Thank you. Mr.
Mohachi. Thank you, Chairperson. In the report, we stated on the Vichula project that the project was cancelled. The tender process, as none of the bidders met the critical criteria. Now, I want to know why it is understood why the project has been cancelled. A loss of more than 12 million has been incurred. Who was responsible for authorizing the project without checking whether bidders adhere to the criteria or not? Secondly, what steps have been taken against the individual or second responsible for? The other question, Chair. It is stated that one of the personnel was suspended for the whole year, and I think the department was cost something like over $1 million in paying her at home and so on. And we have just learned that she has been reinstated. Now, what I want to know is that did she get her position back as it was before, or is it the position was filled, and what is happening around that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Are you comfortable to take the first batch of questions, or Can I ask more questions, Mr. Thoma? Maybe we should have this round to complete it, and then we have a second round with new fresh questions. Can I just add to the three of the questions that has been asked? Mr. Shah asked his first question about the restructuring. I talk under correction that Parliament, this committee, has never been updated on what exactly does the restructuring of Arms Corps entail. It's more maybe not only a question to you, but also to the Department of Defense. Surely there must be a legal framework in place. Surely there must be a repeal or amended of your Arms Corps Act. We've not been updated or requested or informed whatsoever about this. I see on your page 28 of your report, you talk about the dairy, the units, entities who will be included into the dairy, including Arms Corps Business, DPSS, and the Overberg Test Range. We haven't been consulted or informed about this. The establishment of the dairy, or your establishment proposed as DASU, will be under the Secretary for Defense. What will be the chain of command? I'm expanding on the question asked by a member. Where does the dairy fit in, the components? And what will be the practical implications? We said about this restructuring. We need to take hands. I know we have a workshop on the 27th with the defense-related industry, so surely some of the issues will be discussed there. But this is one of the questions that the members are now putting to you, is about the restructuring and the implications thereof for the future of your Arms Corps. The second question I want to add to the Vistula project. We learned that you had an internal disciplinary investigation into the cancellation of that contract. And we just want to know, adding to the question put by Mr. Moache, whether that report has been completed of the investigation about the cancellation of this major tender. And who was responsible for the project, and if somebody was guilty, what was or negative, what was the result of that report? Just to add to that, it's over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I'll attempt and answer these questions, and also to address some of the issues that you raised and that you asked us to look into. The Honorable Shah raised a concern on the transformation of Arms Corps, wanting to know what is happening because Parliament was not briefed. I just want to indicate that all I'm able to say, I can only say from the perspective of being the CEO of Arms Corps. I cannot speak for the ministry. I cannot speak for the department. So, having said that, from an Arms Corps perspective, the minister has asked that this thing be done. And he asked that Arms Corps should be transformed to focus on the acquisition of defense material on the one hand and the formation of the dairy on the other hand. And as I made remarks earlier and said, he asked that these things be done, and then we said, Minister, maybe we should put in a process in place to look at these things and find out if this is the correct way to proceed with it. And he has agreed, and then a team was formed to investigate what is the corporate form, what is the best corporate form that Arms Corps must take. And another investigation, like I said, included people from Arms Corps, people from the department, people from the CSIR, and then people from DINEL. And then they looked at Arms Corps and said, arms score should be kept as it is. It should not be changed. Keep arms score as it is, keep the board, keep the tender board, keep everything intact. That was the arms score. So as far as that is concerned, from the arms score point of view, the arms score acquisition, nothing, it was proposed that nothing changes. And the minister accepted it. And I said, if there was any changes to be done, and there were going to be two, the one is change the classification of arms score in terms of treasury, in terms of the PFMA. Currently, arms score in the PFMA is classified as Schedule 2. And we agree with the investigator that arms score should not be at Schedule 2. Looking at the way it was Schedule 2 when Dinel was still... Actually, the understanding was it would be a Schedule 2 if it included Dinel. So it is not a Schedule 2, it should be a Schedule 3. That is the one change. And the second change would be changing of the Act. If now the part of arms score, which we call arms score business, are taken away to form the dairy, then there will be a need to change the Act to reflect it. And then I said, this investigation has been done and completed, and it was presented to the minister who has accepted it. But as part of an audit trail, we needed to have the minister sign a document to say, me, minister so-and-so, on such and such a date, I've approved this. And the minister resigned before he could do that. That is now the arms corps part. And then there is the dairy now. There was another team formed to look at the dairy. And what the minister sought to do is a reflection of what is happening in other countries. I said, in doing the arms corps study and doing the dairy study, the team looked at the UK, Sweden, Germany, India, Brazil was not completely inappropriate, but they looked at a number of countries. And they found that actually the word dairy, if members who have been in the committee long enough will remember that even in the UK, there was a dairy at some point. So the minister thought that he wants to combine these test and evaluation capabilities into a new dairy organization which will sit in the Ministry of Defense but outside arms corps. And then the investigation was done, it was complete, and exactly in the same way presented to the minister who approved it. And then, but before he could sign a document to say that now he has approved this thing, the minister resigned. So there's no record that this thing has been fully approved. And I said also the minister started raising issues like maybe the best way, the best place for the dairy to report is not in the department, but it's in science and technology, and co-locate with the CSIR. And there was still that debate when the minister resigned. Now, that process has not been completed. It's still pending because there has been no conclusion where the minister has put his signature to finalize the process. And if the minister finalized the process, I take it he would have brought it to Parliament because as a follow-up, there should have been a law that is enacted to give effect to this new dairy. I think the minister was still doing research, at the end of which he would bring it to Parliament. So that process has not finally been concluded. And up to now, that process is hanging. Now, that relates now to the first concern by Honorable Shah about the issue of the transformation of arms corps. And then, a follow-up question was, how does the transformation speak to the region? Now, honorable members will recall that There's no company like AMSCO in the whole of Africa. You have a company like AMSCO in other European and American countries, but in Africa there's no company like AMSCO. So the relevance of AMSCO in this context is limited to the country. The AMSCO Act, though, does recognize that AMSCO could try and assist other neighboring countries by helping them procure military hardware and assist them into doing research and all those related issues, provided the minister approves it. We can't just go and do it. We do it with the approval of the minister. So there was no direct relevance of this process to the region, so to speak. And under the issue of the A400M, what are the implications that the A400M has been delayed? Just to give you a clear understanding, I'd like Mr. Mkwana just to elaborate, because he's the one who's managing the problem.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the A400, what has been officially communicated to us is that officially they have declared a 6-month delay. However, if we do analysis, we see that it could extend to a year. That is now, if you look at the worst scenario. The reason being, the production of the A400 was affected by the challenges that experienced with the engine, especially the software of the engine, the FADEC, and also the problem of the final assembly line. So that has affected the total program of the Six Nations. So far, what we see is that the first aircraft is going to be delayed. We looked at 9 months as it is right now. But remember that we are involved in a program of a number of nations. So it's not yet very clear in terms of the direct impact on South African production. So we still need to get now an official notification from the EABS or Airbus in terms of what is the direct impact in as far as the South African production is concerned. Maybe I might as well touch on the issue of whether do we levy penalties if there are delays. Yes, we work on milestones, and for those milestones that have not been reached, we are putting up penalties on those particular milestones, and we have already indicated that they were going to levy penalties.
Thank you, Mr. Mkona. And if I may add, the Honorable Shah wanted to know what are the implications. The implications are that the DTI was the one that put in work packages for a number of companies in the country, including Dinel. So what that means is that Dinel, as we know, is in a serious problematic position. So what it means is that that position is not going to be mitigated very soon, because now there's a delay, and for now we know that it's a year. For all that we know, it could be more, and Dinel's situation could be adversely affected as a result. And then there was a question also about the issue of the stock sales. Why does the NCACC, or does the NCACC understand the implications of its restrictions? The biggest problem which relates to this issue, as far as the period in question is concerned, was largely not the problem of the NCACC. It was the problem of AMSCO and the DOD. Unfortunately, there were situations where the NCACC, where AMSCO go to the NCACC to apply for permits for certain things, and we find that the DOD would take our permit to the NCACC for the NCACC to give us certain permits. And then other members of the DOD would, in the same meeting, object to the permits being issued. So it was a problem of the department appearing not to be organized. But that problem has subsequently gone away. It has been resolved. It has completely disappeared. The only problem that we could say that we have as far as this issue is concerned is capacitation of the DOD in terms of addressing these issues. There are beginning to be serious erosion of capabilities in those areas, and we are coming in to assist them. That is the only problem that exists now. But relating to the areas during the period in question, that was a different problem, and that has been resolved. And what informs the issue of withdrawing of vehicles? Well, our understanding is that the minister has got a right to donate military hardware to any country that he so chooses. So if certain equipment has been given to us to dispose of, and subsequently the minister later says, no, bring it back, I want to donate it to another country, we have got nothing to say as far as that is concerned. And then why donate vehicles to the African Republic while soldiers are short of vehicles? That can only be answered by the department. We as AMSCO are not in a position to answer that question. Now, why did partners of the dockyard withdraw? For the dockyard, we are looking at the people who can assist us develop the dockyard from the point of view of recapitalizing the dockyard. To buy new equipment. That place has been standing there. I mean, some of the equipment there are 33 years, 40 years old. And we need to buy new machinery to recapitalize the dockyard. So we've approached a number of people to partner with them. And one of the people that we approached was a dockyard in the UK who looked at the situation. And from their point of view, they thought we are looking for people to come in and run the dockyard for us so that they can make money out of it. And when negotiations started progressing and it became apparent to them that we were not looking for what they are, that actually our interests are mismatched, so they withdrew. And then currently we have a company, MBDA, who have got actually from the deep point of view, they've got an obligation to invest in South Africa. So they want to take that deep obligation and do a project like this and partner with us and bring in investment to revive the dockyard on the one hand, and also to start an apprentice school in the dockyard to train technical skills here in the Cape. People who could be used in the maritime environment and also in the environment at large, largely in the Cape area. So we have signed an MOU with these people. Currently, they are doing an investigation of how to package this thing. And then they told us that by about early next year, about April, they should give us a proposal of how to do it and tell us how much money they are going to invest. So when that happens, we should be able to bring that information to the committee. And then there was the issue that was raised by Ms. Daniels about the dockyard. That AMSCO has taken the dockyard from the 1st of April, but we were unable to manage it. What I indicated earlier was that we took the dockyard, and then from the 1st of September up to the beginning of or end of the financial year, what we were doing is when you take a facility like that, you need to first of all go through and do an audit of what is it that you have. What is it that you need to have? Where do you want to take this organization? What are the deficiencies and so on? Now, we were busy with that exercise. And like I said, we've just finished that exercise, and we were putting things like HR systems and appointing people in critical areas. So we are going ahead with the process, but we don't want to rush it and run away, because our primary responsibility lies with providing a maintenance service for the Navy. That is our primary responsibility. So we don't want to run away and start concentrating in other areas and neglect this area. So we are focusing and moving slowly, but we don't want to run ahead of ourselves. And then, Mr. Kovler, if you could just explain to Honorable Daniels the post-retirement benefit of AMSCO.
Thank you, sir. In terms of our conditions of employment, AMSCO provides post-retirement health care benefits to its members. Therefore, we've established a fund that makes provision for that liability of the employer. The fund is being invested in the market by two investment portfolio managers. The fund is, the liability is on an annual basis being calculated by the actuaries to make sure that what the liability of the fund will be. If you see for the current year, with the market growth, the fund's assets exceeded the liability, and therefore there was a portion that was recognized within AMSCO's financial statements. So it's basically a fund that was established or is established for to make sure that AMSCO can oblige its liability to provide post-care medical benefits to its members.
And that is required by law that we do it.
We should have it.
And all companies do it.
You'll find in the sensitivity analysis, you'll see figures there that with 1% deviation in the medical inflation rate, you'll find that the benefit or the liability increases with 52 million, with 1% increase in medical inflation. So there's a lot of things that's being, like, also like factors that's being used for calculating that liability that affects that amount. And with the current year's market, the effect that it has on the fund, we'll find that we'll probably have a reversal in the next year with the surplus not being there at this stage.
Thank you, Mr. Kovler. And then the Honorable Moase has raised two issues. The first one relates to Project Vistula, and he is saying we have cancelled Project Vistula due to bidders not making the critical criteria, which has resulted in an amount of 12 million being spent without corresponding benefit. Now, this Project Vistula, maybe I'll just step back so that I just try and share with you the background relating to this project. What we have done, or what we continuously do in AMSCO, is that we set up systems for evaluating this project. Systems which are manned by teams of people. And we try and separate the responsibilities of people. But the team that sends out the tender, when the tender comes back, is not the one that evaluates the tender. After it has evaluated the tender, you've got different people who do different things to the process. So as far as Project Vistula is concerned, it's a very big project. It's a project which is a few billion, and then it relates to logistic vehicles. And what has happened in this case is that we send out a tender. Oh no, actually, before we even set out the tender, the Army engaged a certain company called LMT for them to advise the Army on the strategy that the Army must follow on managing their vehicles and how to use their vehicles, and how to move quicker when they deploy in the operational field and so on. So this company advised the Army, and they did an excellent job. And subsequently,
when this project Vistula, before it was conceived, the army said, this LMT, AMSCO, please use this guide for us to guide us on what, how to develop our vehicle strategy. Because the army is looking at integrating these vehicles. So that you have something like a flatbed, which today it can put in a water tank and go and deliver water. Tomorrow it puts in a petrol tank. The other day it puts in a bag that allows it to go and deliver people. The following day it delivers. So they were looking at using, coming up with vehicles which have got, which could be integrated to do a number of things. So these guys were asked to do computer modeling of all those things and to advise AMSCO and the army in terms of how we could do this. And then they did that, and they finished, and then they walked away. And AMSCO said in their contract that when you do this with us, when a project starts, Project Vistula, you are not allowed to associate with any of the bidders. And these guys agreed and they walked away. And then Project Vistula started. And then a number of companies tendered. And then after they tendered, we shortlisted some of the companies. And those that were shortlisted were asked to bring vehicles which were 6x6 and 8x8 from their countries to bring them here for us to test. Now, the bulk of that 12 million was spent in relation to those activities, where you bring all those vehicles and then we test these vehicles and then we take them to Gerotech. We've got a test facility there where we tested them. Some of them get tested in the field, in the bush, to check their performance, and so on and so on. And then, after we have tested these vehicles, we shortlisted what we thought was the preferred supplier, that now, this is the guy that we want to place an order with. And unfortunately, that information leaked into the public domain, that so-and-so now are considered as the preferred supplier. And the guys who were not now the preferred supplier started saying, but what you don't know is that these guys should win. Because there's this company that AMSCO was using that was helping them to do the strategy. These guys are working hand in glove with these guys, so they should win. And they didn't come to AMSCO, they wrote them a letter to the minister. They said, Minister, here's an anonymous letter, we are telling you your process is flawed because there is collusion. These guys, they were not supposed to help anyone, now they are helping this one bidder. And then the minister asked the DEFSEC to investigate. And then the DEFSEC undertook an investigation. And then after the DEFSEC undertook about two or three investigations. But on the last investigation, he found out that there were certain processes which were not followed clinically inside AMSCO. And he came to us and said, I came to you and said, these guys who are not supposed to help anyone are helping these guys. And you said, even if they are helping these guys, that does not taint the process. Now I have additional evidence that here are some irregularities where your process was not properly followed. And when the minister and the DEFSEC bring that to your attention, you have to stop the process because they had evidence. We stopped then the process and investigated and found out that indeed there were some problems. And subsequently we cancelled the tender. After we cancelled the tender,
we instituted disciplinary action among our own people. That there are certain things that we did not follow properly. And what we found was that we could not find evidence of somebody trying to commit fraud or anything. We just found people who were incompetent in the way they were doing their jobs. People who were not properly competent. And then when we asked our people, we were given excuses that, yeah, but you know, so-and-so resigned, you know, this and this happened. We are shot on the ground. And subsequently, we took disciplinary action. And there was a result, which was an outcome, which we don't like, which we are still looking at to find out if other things that we need to strengthen up to make sure that those things cannot happen. And that because we canceled the thing, the Project Vistula, we went back and examined our processes and made sure that we button all the loopholes that something similar does not happen in future. After we were satisfied that we have done that, we went back to the DOD and said, we want to restart Project Vistula. And that project now, unfortunately, if it was not for the passing away of the DEFSEC, that project would have started now in November. But there was subsequently a delay. It will start around February. That is our plan. Now, that was Project Vistula. And then Honorable Mwasa also raised an issue of the general manager who stayed at home for a long time, for about a year. Now, as far as that issue is concerned, that issue was discussed at length on the 24th of June this year. Myself and the chairman were called to the portfolio committee, and the chairman was asked all the questions that the committee wanted to ask. And I just want to add as well that, unfortunately, on Friday last week, we received a series of questions relating to that issue. And I just want to indicate that on the 3rd of July, the acting chairman of the portfolio committee, Honorable Nduli, wrote to the chairman of AMSCO and asked for all the documents relating to this matter. By that time, the chairman on the 24th of June indicated to the portfolio committee that the investigation has been done, everything has been done, and a decision has been taken as to how to proceed with the case of Ms. Broad. But the chairman was unwilling to share that decision with the committee because he said the concerned party were not informed of the outcome. And after that, the Honorable Nduli on the 3rd of July wrote to the chairman and asked him to bring all pertaining documents on this issue. And all those documents were submitted to the Honorable Mr. Nduli. And after they were submitted, we called and wrote a letter to confirm that the office of Mr. Nduli did get it. And we did receive a confirmation from Ms. Bailey, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, that all the documents are with the chairperson. And those documents relate to the letter of Ms. Buroto, dated 18th of August, where she was lodging a grievance, a report by Rutledge Modise, attorney, dated the 27th of March, a complaint by the CEO about irregular process that was being followed on the grievance. And then, in terms of reference of the external consultant investigating the allegations, that is the lawyer that was brought in to investigate the allegations. An investigation report, allegation raised by Ms. Boroto in a formal grievance against Mr. Thomas, received from the lawyer. A report of the Human Resource Committee of the Board prepared by Seventh Labor Solutions. A report on the AMSCO Ms. Boroto matter dated 8 May, received from the attorney. The final resolution of the Board of Directors on this issue. Appointment letter of the Chief Executive Officer. Appointment contract of the General Manager Corporate Affairs. AMSCO conditions employment practice, letter granting Ms. Boroto paid leave of absence, and the process followed in granting that leave, and an online total financial cost to AMSCO with regard to this grievance, and a table of new appointed directors. Date of appointment, terms of office, description of their specialities, and in addition, the chairman enclosed the honorable committee's information on directors' CVs. So, Chairperson, I think I have answered all the questions that were raised by the honorable members.
Thank you. We will give chance now for follow-ups to conclude these issues that you've addressed. Can I just say that on the restructuring issue, we're not going to finish that one yet in this meeting, because it's AMSCO involved, it's the Department of Defense involved, it's the Ministry of Defense involved. And I would kindly suggest, before I give members chance to have follow-up questions, that this issue needs to be discussed between all the concerned stakeholders. And once you have that decision and finality to inform Parliament about this, because we are on the sideline, with all respect, we're not informed. As the overseers of Arms Corps and the DOD and the MOD, which is a serious concern for us. So before I give members a chance to have a follow-up, I would like to recommend that this meeting makes a recommendation to say, as far as the restructuring of Arms Corps is concerned, all the issues you've raised, by the minister, the previous minister, the team, the decisions taken, that a conclusion should be made, and Parliament, this committee in Parliament, should be informed. What is the status quo, the progress, and the way forward regarding the restructuring of Arms Corps? If members agree on that one. Secondly, on the Vistula, I hear what you say, but the question is then, was there any, you call it incompetency and disciplinary action? I think we would also recommend that you inform this committee about the outcome of that in the disciplinary decision that you took. About the incompetency, the disciplinary action against, I believe, an individual. If not now, within a week after the date of this meeting. So that we can just put this aside and join you as far as a new tender is concerned, which will go out in February next year. And you must just assure us there will be no legal challenges. Of all the parties who were part of the old tender, who's going to re-tender, or to say, no, we're not going to re-tender, we will see you in court on these legal challenges. So we need to just to close that on Project Vistula. I think we're very close to that point to make a decision as far as that is concerned. Members, Secretary of Defense, do you want to make an input on some of these matters that the CEO has responded to?
Yes, Honorable Chair, if you'll allow Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. You correctly did raise a question on this matter that you now rolled on with respect to the whole transformation of AMSCO. That is part of an overall transformation of the sector, and it's not just AMSCO. Yes, it appears in the AMSCO annual report, but we are also involved in that process. At the end of the day, we are going to be the end user. Involved also, I think he did mention, is also the Department of Science and Technology, as well as trade and industry and so on. The public enterprises, sorry, not trade and industry. Now, this whole process arises from a meeting of the three ministers who had then met and discussed this matter over a year ago, 2 years ago. And it was that which had then instructed that work be done, including examining what would be the legislative implications, the same questions you had asked, to bring all of those forward, after which we then obviously have to approach Parliament, because then there are entities across the board, not only in the defense sphere, but in the science and technology sphere, in the public enterprises sphere, insofar as the defense or defense-related entities are concerned. So it was within that context that Parliament had not yet been approached, because there had been no absolute finality now on what the shape and form of such entities would be, not only this dairy, but also a whole range of them. With respect to the NCAC, National Conventional Arms Control Committee, I do not agree with what the CEO is saying, that AMSCO will present their matters to us and then we would take them to the NCACC and then disagree there or shoot them down. We are one of the ministries in the NCACC. There are several others, at least seven, the other ministries. So that a matter gets taken under our sponsorship to the NCACC and then we shoot it down, we would not do that. And in any case, what would we gain from it? If we had to do that, we would not even proceed to the stage of going to the NCACC, because, of course, the question is going to be to the defense function, not necessarily to AMSCO. So I just thought that I needed to put that record straight. On the CAR and the vehicles donated to the CAR, against the background of shortages for the reserve and so on, just to put it in context, the vehicles that were donated to the CAR were vehicles that needed refurbishment. They were not working vehicles. They needed refurbishment. Actually, they still do. And they were protracted negotiations with the CAR that here, this is what we will donate to you. The upkeep and repair and bringing them up to serviceability or workability will be at your cost. So it is at that point. They were not donated vehicles that were up and running and so on. And AMSCO was then given the responsibility to contract industry to do that, because AMSCO is then the disposal agency for the DOD. So I just thought I needed to put all of those things in context. Finally, Honorable Chair and members, on this Vistula, I would rather we have a more detailed, comprehensive presentation to yourselves at the right time. I would not have liked that we discussed that at this particular point, but we would be ready to appear before the committee as the DOD and AMSCO with respect to Project Vistula, as well as other projects that would deem fit, or that the committee would deem fit. As a matter of fact, in any case, honorable members here have asked parliamentary questions, not only on Vistula, but also on other projects. So, but we would rather have a sound engagement on it. It's understandable that it's raised because it's a matter that is in the annual report. So it's absolutely correct to raise that. But we would want to have a more detailed, comprehensive presentation on that much later on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary of Defense. We can arrange it. I'm not sure whether what the program of a committee looks after we adjourn this week. So whether there will be time to do that presentation, I'm not too sure. Let's ring fence it and ask the Arms Corps as far as the internally disciplinary facility is concerned. They just give us a feedback on what happened there. It's an internal matter. And then we can see whether we can get Project Vistula on the program of the committee. Members, follow up, Mr. Shaw, Mr. Schmidt, and Mr. Daniel, and Mr. Fischler.
Thank you, Chair. Just very quickly, I just want to, first of all, just comment on what the CEO has just said about the continent not having an entity such as Arms Corps. I'm pretty aware of that. The question I was raising is not about how the transformation will affect defense industry on the continent as such, because there is no other Arms Corps. Because Dewey obviously has to take into account it has to locate itself. What market are we looking at? What is it that we want to manufacture and for who? Now, being an industry on the continent, it would make sense for us to try and capture the African market and try to see what we can do in Africa. You get what I'm saying? So what I want to try and understand is, whilst this transformation is taking place in terms of structure, whatever, and then you have Derry on the other side, which is dealing with defense-related matters, defense industry level. I was trying to understand, are they thinking about the type of weapons that is generally in use on the continent, the systems that are used in the continent by the armies? Where are they looking? Which markets are they buying in? What's our competition like? What's our priority? What's our focus? We are designing stuff. Is it good enough for other parts of Africa in terms of terrain and force designs? You know, so while this is happening, do they have that vision? Are they looking at that? The African market, and then are we producing something that we can sell to Africa? If we are working with other African forces, we manufacture something. Can they use it? We can use it. Can they use it? If we have an integrated standby force, what we produce, whether it's spare parts or whether it's ammunition, etc. So are they capable of putting it to use? Because we have that broader picture of us playing a bigger role in Africa, right? So that's what I was talking about, not what you understood. I know there's no Arms Corps on the rest of Africa. I understand. Second question was regarding the general manager of corporate affairs. We still don't have a true understanding of how she has been reinstated and what are the implications of, you know, her position right now. I don't know if the situation was vacant. Which position did she come under? What happened to her claims that she made in the past in terms of bonuses and all of the other added relevant matters? You are aware of them. How have they been resolved? And what kind of relationship do we envisage, given the fact that there was strained relations between the CEO and her, and how this would impact on the morale of the organization? Or is she determined to continue working, or do you think she might at some stage vacate and then you'll be sitting with a vacancy again? So we're just trying to understand how that has been handled. Thank you.
Before we continue, can we just conclude as we go? We're running out of time. On the restructuring issue first, are there any follow-up questions about the restructuring of Arms Corps? This issue to bed, and then we go to the second question and the list of speakers that I have. I'm talking now restructuring. Let me just finish this one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can see that on the PowerPoint here, the people have been employed, black people have been appointed since from 2001, every year, annually, they've been appointing huge number of people here, and then it all give me 407. But it doesn't state that. I would have preferred if it was stated in this appointment that on what level are these people employed on, managerial level or just ordinary employment and so on, so that we should know that whether we are making inroads or we are just appointing because of appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. You can answer that question, but can we conclude? We need to make recommendations now. We make a recommendation that as far as the restructuring of Arms Corps is concerned, and that involves the department, DG, that involves the ministry, that involves Arms Corps, that we, it's a cluster of ministers that you said earlier. If it's a cluster of ministers, the cluster in Parliament must be informed. It's a DOD decision, then the department, the portfolio committee on defense must be informed. That we make a decision that as soon as you've finalized the restructuring of Arms Corps, that this committee be informed, either as a committee or as a cluster of committees, if it involves more departments like you've indicated. I think the time has come to an end that this process can run without Parliament being informed what is happening. Can we make that recommendation, Comrade Daniels?
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry to take you back. I thought Mr. Thomas said there was a suggestion to say they must leave Arms Corps as is. I speak on correction. Now, if that is the case, for one, I do not think or believe that that process was free of charge as it happened. I'm sure they incurred some financial enough, for one. For two, I think, again, I'll go back to what you have said, Chair, to say it was not going to be proper for anyone to come to Parliament, for Parliament to just approve something that Parliament has not been part of. So if that's the case, is what Mr. Thomas has said, to say they suggested that they leave ESCO as is, what then? What now? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for supporting. What we're saying, we need to be informed about the legal framework. We need to be informed about the dairy, the Arms Corps in the new or old form, whatever the case may be. Parliament cannot be marginalized as far as this is concerned. That is the bottom line. If you say it's a team that decided status quo and another report to say in page 28 the dairy consists of that, we need to be informed right from the word go. We cannot and we will not be allowed, like we did now this year, to be informed at the last minute, forced into approving a bill that we haven't been consulted with, that we've not been informed, because we are separate from the executive. We've got our own mandate to oversee not only the entity, not only the department, but also the ministry. And we will keep to that mandate. So maybe it's a friendly warning that we're not going to expect you to come to us and just rubber stamp something that we're not informed of. We're not going to approve of that. So can we make a recommendation as Comrade Daniels allocated, informed, that we follow that process to be informed? Anything more on the restructuring? On the restructuring. Can we finish restructuring? Okay, the second issue was on the grievances. The grievance process. Now, I hear you, Mr. Tomo, that you've set the discussion on 24 June with the Portfolio Committee, the 3rd July with the acting chair at that time. And if I hear you correct, that process has now been concluded in Arms Corps, but we're not aware of it. So can I make a recommendation from the chair, and you can change it, that within a number of days after this meeting, which is the 17th, we can make it 4 weeks or 2 weeks, that this committee receives a report from Arms Corps to state how this process has been concluded, with all the elements that you've cited from the document that you read. Just to inform us so that we can get closure on this and put it behind us. make that as a second recommendation. How much time do you need? A week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks?
Actually, the chair, I think it would be fair to give us about 4 weeks. The letter will be ready, but our chairman is also has got other.
We make 4 weeks. We're going very close to Christmas. So
we'll send it first week of December. Yes.
First week in December. Can somebody help me with the date in December?
I'm not on the time period, but I also want on that report to tell us if this whole process was not going to take the skill that we wanted to retain from ASCO, as a matter of fact, and give it to the dairy. Was this transformation is going on? What did we envisage with this whole thing?
Now, grievance. The grievance against the general manager corporate affairs. Are you talking about that one? We're talking now about the grievance by the general manager of corporate affairs. That's the issue we're discussing now. So we need a report.
Okay, later.
And I think the reason for the delay, were there any blames? By delaying the cost, everything that you've mentioned, we need a closure and a report on that by the first week in December. I'm still waiting for a date.
We propose the 1st of December.
Can we approve of that? A report by AMSCO on the grievance process on the 4th of December to this committee. Let's close the matter. Are we happy? Okay, then. The next issue is on Project Vestula. Let's close that issue with a recommendation. The Secretary of Defense asked for a presentation to be made to the Portfolio Committee. If I remember the program correctly, it's not going to be this week, unless it's in the annual report, which I doubt, of the department. Next week we're meeting with the State of Readiness, as well as the defense-related industries. I doubt whether it will be there. So then we need to find another space for a presentation on Project Vestula. Can we make a recommendation that the Department of Defense will make a presentation to this committee at appropriate time when we find both a time and a place to make a presentation or receive a presentation on that? But separate to that is also for Arms Corps to inform us within your own organization what the finding of your disciplinary action within Arms Corps relating to this issue. Secretary, are you happy with that? Because that's an internal issue. Can we make that recommendation, Mr. Shaw?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think what we can do is, whilst we struggle to find some kind of an accommodation for the actual presentation, maybe if we can receive the report, a written report on the project itself, as well as the outcomes of that internal investigation, etc., would be helpful. So in the event that when we do actually have the sitting, we would have some idea as to what we are looking at. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if it's in the form of a written document also, would be helpful. Chair, there's something else that we're missing here which I thought I should highlight.
That's a new issue.
It is, Chair. It's a big problem.
Yeah, but is it to do with the three issues we've just...
Not specifically with what we have discussed.
I have you as a speaker, but there's a speaker list now. So can we just finish the speakers, and if it's a new issue, I'll come back to you.
Yes.
Daniel, are you still want to take your speaking time?
I don't know whether it's a follow-up on the same questions that we asked, but I have three. One, in the presentation, they made reference to personnel that was 55 and older, but I did not get exactly what were they saying, although I got that they are rejuvenating. But the scheme transfer is not clear as to what is happening currently. Outside the fact that they stated that they will be going to a program of 5 year plus program of skills transfer, but that is too fuzzy. It's not clear exactly what is happening, because I think we have been harping on this for a number of years now, the skills transfer issue. That's one. Two, Mr. Tomo made mention of the fact that in the dockyard they've hired, I don't know whether it's a company or whoever, that will be training people for the skills that are needed to deal with all what they found out that they needed, or the skills that they needed in the dockyard. Now, my concern is, won't be these people there, because we know for a fact that there's a scarcity of skills, won't they be taken from the same pool that they have mentioned that they are in a process of training people? They've got this program, that the project that they've started, where they've been going to, they've gone to UNISA colleges and et cetera. That's second. And lastly, on the medical that they mentioned, I just wanted to get, what happens if a person was a former member and has this skill, this medical skill scheme, and goes to another company where he or she will be having another medical skill scheme? What happens then? Section.
Those are three new questions. Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on a slightly different issue, albeit on lack of information, because it seems to me that the Vistula and the reorganization of OMSCOR, which is a state. But if you look at pages 10 to 12 of your OMSCOR annual report, it's been indicated to us that your DIPs, your industrial obligations, in regards to especially Gripen's, the Hawks have been fully accomplished, but your Gripen and especially your Super Lynx helicopters, which are relatively recent purchase, but especially with regards to your Gripen and your frigates and your submarines, are still outstanding. But our concern is the Gripen, it doesn't indicate what form the DIPs will take. So, you know, if you want to, you know, if you want some suspicious minds to start off, people would like to know what kind of form those DIPs take place. They all mention in terms of the other items, but not in terms of the Hawks, which have been accomplished, but in terms of the Super Lynx, which is not mentioned, the Gripens, which are not mentioned. What kind of DIPs? It's quite substantive, 1.2 billion on the Gripens, I think, yeah.
Thank you. I think Mr. Smith is asking for the examples of technology transfers, export orders, and the jobs created, that sort of detail. Mr. Fichler?
Why the corporation should be commended for its strategy and in rejuvenating employees, especially technical employees? It is a concern that only 16 out of 20 learnerships were completed within the planned time scale, and 55 employees have been counseled for financial problems, mainly because performance bonus was not paid. Explain some of the main reasons why 55 employees had to be counseled for financial problems. One. Two, what were the areas of concern regarding safety, health, and environment that have been noted? Those are the two questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fischler. Mr. Tomo, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll start with questions raised by Honorable Daniel.
Mr. Tomo, you're most welcome to include members of your team.
Yes.
To answer
yes.
Your bill.
Dr. Potter, people who are 55 years or older, what are we doing?
Chair, the reason why we've highlighted the situation with people 55 years and older is because we have identified one of the human resources risk in Armscor is the aging workforce. So people that are nearing retirement or people that can opt at any time to retire is one of the concerns that we need to address. That's why we've actually highlighted one of the programs that we have run is to identify everybody 55 and older, and especially those people in the technical areas, and then to instruct or look at ways of skills transfers of those specific people. So we've got succession, that's why we link it to succession planning, but specific action to say what are we going to do that. So when those people do opt for retirement, or when they do reach retirement age, that we actually have things in place for the people to replace them. That's why we've highlighted the 55 and older. We've also looked at the key skills or the core skills in the organization as well. Because you will appreciate that if you only do succession planning in an organization such as Armscor, where we really have some transformational targets in terms of changing the face of the organization, that you need to bring in people from the outside. Because in a lot of cases, some of the natural successes is not necessarily going to change the face of the organization. So we're looking at pools of people rather than finding successors for individuals. So we're looking at pools of people. That's why we said we've concentrated on areas of core skills that we need to look at. I think that's why we've highlighted in our specific presentation.
Okay, thank you. And then Honorable Daniels also raised the issue of the training that I spoke about in the dockyard. The training that I spoke about in the dockyard is different from the training that he spoke about where we collaborate with Msobovu, where we do talent development pool, where we train people in-house, where we find people from UNISA and those universities. That is completely something different. This will be over and above that. The biggest problem that we have in this country is that we don't have enough trained technical people. And then this is going to focus on training technical people. So this is going to be over and above. But I'm saying we are still looking at a package. That will be one of the packages that we are going to start with when we collaborate with this company that is busy doing evaluation to structure the deal that we need to do. And then Honorable Smith raised the issue about DIP. DIP, which relates to Gripen and the submarine, Mr. Fogler.
Unfortunately, I haven't got the detail of the full obligation, how it was broken down. I can just say up to the 31st of March 2008, for the Gripen aircraft, 1.7 billion was sales, local and export, 1.8 was technology transfers, and 172 million was investments. We find that same figure on page 24, the 3764. So I haven't got the detail of what is planned for until 2011. What will be in the DIP plan, so I can provide that to the honourable member if he wants that.
Okay, and then finally, Honourable Fisa raised the issue of 16 learnerships and employee counselling and issues that relate to safety. So, Dr. Potkita.
As far as the learnership is concerned, it was a learnership that was sponsored via the CETA. In that people did in their spare time. We actually were of the opinion the fact that the number that completed it within the time that was allocated was actually quite a good performance for the organization itself. The fact that very few people actually did not finish within the time allocated. The services CETA was quite impressed with our performance as well.
Thank you.
The counselling, I think the counselling, I don't know to what extent the committee was aware of some of the problems that we experienced with the non-payment of performance remuneration in the previous financial year. I think the counseling that was needed, because employees have actually expected that they will receive the performance remuneration, and the fact that it didn't happen, that as a serious financial implication for some people that were hanging on by their nails in terms of meeting the requirements. So I think ultimately it is basically that the difficult for some people to survive in terms of the present financial circumstances, and they just needed support on that.
And there was something raised by Honorable Fischer about safety issues. Yeah, we did an audit of the entire AMSCO and identify what safety problems we had. And lastly, the problems that we had related to the dockyard and a little bit of Alkanpan. There are reports that we have identified, and then we put in management actions to address those issues. And lastly, I think about 80 or 90% of them have been addressed. But I unfortunately don't have the details, but if the Honorable Member wants the details, we can bring the safety report.
Thank you. Before I give Mr. Shaw a before I give you a chance, can I just ask one question? On your page 67 and 87 of your report, on page 67, on the accounts receivable, your accounts receivable jumped from, I'm talking now AMSCO Corporation, jumped from 52.2 million to 73.5 million. That's an increase of about 20 million plus. When you go to note 13 on page 87, you see the related parties other jumped from 3.4 million to 18 million. Do you have that? And if you go, what we discussed earlier, your 120 days outstanding receivables from 10.8 million to 20.8 million. That's a 10 million. Why is this dramatic increase of related other parties? And this big jump on the 120 days, is that one big account? And if so, who is that one big account?
On the portion of outstanding amounts, there's still some money being owed for part of the for the rental, for the maintenance of the building. So we're still busy in discussion with the DOD on that specific issue for their contribution to the maintenance of the AMSCO building. So that's basically the big outstanding portion there. On the accounts receivable, you'll find that the medical benefit fund also made a difference there. The portion that we've recognized for the surplus in the medical benefit fund, that's the big jump in the accounts receivable on page 67. So that basically was recognized as a current asset at that stage. Yes, definitely.
The parties, it's nothing to do with rental, it's to do with maintenance.
Well, it includes the maintenance for the building, but it also includes other accounts like corrective services and things like that. That's basically part of the AMSCO business, what's outstanding at year end. So there's nothing peculiar about that, just based on the business at that specific stage.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. During the presentation, the CEO indicated that the Vistula project was stalled also as a result of the demise of SecDef, I think, something like that.
Just a moment. Are you going back to Vistula?
No, not necessarily Vistula, Chair.
Because we've...
I'm just using that as an example, if you allow me, Chair. What I'm trying to understand is, how many other projects have been affected as a consequence of the demise, sadly, of the SecDef, as well as the simultaneously now the very soon resigning of the minister. Maybe we need to
make a check, make an audit check and see what are the projects that had come on his table of the SecDef and what projects were sitting on the table of the minister, which have, as you said, they need to be signed off, and as a result of not being signed, stalling. Now, is that the only one? How many others are there? If it is there, what are they doing? What is the department doing about it? I know we have appointed a new minister. What is he doing? Is he looking at it? Is it going back for review? Is it going back to cabinet? Well, we need to actually see that, because you had the demise of the SecDef, now you have the resignation of the minister. But we can't allow these two things to stall a very important and significant work within the department. So we need to do an audit and see what is outstanding. Thank you.
Actually, the way the system works is that we don't actually physically submit the documents to them, and then they will sit on their desk or something like that. What happens is that we schedule a series of meetings where they get appraised on the project, and certain approvals are sought from them. That is the DEFSEC and the minister. And then, obviously, the said passing away of the DEFSEC required that certain meetings now cannot happen. Subsequently, will have to be postponed. And then next time, when after the acting DEFSEC was now appointed, it meant that now his schedule becomes more than what it would normally take. You found that the meeting would take about 2 hours. You found that now it takes about 4 or 5 hours. That's what I'm talking about. Even the minister, he's got a forum of his called the Armament Acquisition Council, where certain presentations get taken to him, and the minister gets appraised about the project and where it's going, how much it's going to cost, and so on and so on. If the minister is happy, he approves, and then it goes on. So the honourable member will remember that after the minister has resigned, I think from September, I think for about a month or so, the things first go to the DEFSEC and then come to the minister, and then from there get finalised in AMSCO.
Thank you. And you finish off. Members, any other questions that you want to raise? In that case, Mr. DG.
Chair, thanks very much. I would have said I'd take that with a bowl of salt, because we do engage with them on this, but they're very well affected with respect to the delays in the project, not just that. But on the matches, we have no problem to release the report or some presentation on this to let yourself. It would have been desirable that we present it to yourselves rather than handing in documentation for a number of reasons. Company confidential, departmental confidential, AMSCO confidential, which we'll share with you, but in terms of the release of that, because of some of the points that the Honorable Chair has mentioned, the possible litigation and a whole range of things that would surround that, and also that when we then do that, we conduct that then in a closed session. We'll be ready to do it anytime. It's up to the availability of the committee for us to then jointly, as the DOD, who are the end user but who were involved as the ones who then were the ones who stated the required operational capability and then went through the process up to when we then handed it over, would be ready to share that any time. But apart from that, I don't know if it's the last, but I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity that was presented to us to be here. Ideally, we would have preferred that we have our DOD annual report and our financial statements first before the entities, whether the council or the AMSCO entity, but your programming and all of that. But I'm just saying for the future, if we could sequence it that way, because then the two talk to each other. Yeah. No, but thank you once again, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mr.
to me. Can I just conclude then by saying thank you so much to Mr. Tomo, your team, for the 2.5 hours that you spent here, for the good presentation you made to the committee, the very thorough report you gave to us, the honesty that you answered all the questions. We really appreciate that. We are with you and the future of Arms Corps, whether it's in a current form or in another form. You are very badly needed in the SANDF and in the DOD, and we want to support you in that. That's why we want you to carry out the mandate, and that's why we are very concerned about the transformation and restructuring. It's our family member that we're talking about, and we again extend the invitation to you to trust us, to come to us and say to us, where are the hiccups? Where are the problems? Where you need the support? Where you think it's going wrong and right? To inform Parliament. Because at the end of the day, the members sitting here must approve legislation and changes to legislation and to help in this strategic thinking. And what the Auditor General has been referring to, the going concern, what impact is it going to have on the future operations of your organization? It's still in limbo. So it's in these limbos that sometimes the big trouble steps in. So from that point, we're really interested, and we want to to share your concerns with you. And you must share it with us, your loss of scarce skills. Comrade Daniels has alluded to the human resource issues. We want to share that with you, the grievances, the performance activities. Only three of them were not met, which I think is a good performance. But we want to help you on that. The Vistula, the declining budget, we haven't discussed that, only 5% increase in real and in nominal terms, and to your loss of scarce skill. We really want to thank you for your time, and we're looking forward to put together a report to Parliament on this hearing with recommendations, which will hopefully assist you and will assist the Department and the Ministry at the end of the day to take the process forward, because that is effective oversight, that we can help one another and make it worthwhile to interact on your annual report for such a long time, a whole afternoon. So for you, I really say thank you and safe journey back. To all the members who attended, thank you so much for your attendance and participation, and also to the members of the staff for putting this together, doing the research work and doing the logistics. In conclusion, can I ask all ANC members just to stay behind for a study group? And then tomorrow we have the Department of Defense, the first briefing, and it's tomorrow at 10:30 in M201, Marks Building, room 201, across the street. The meeting is adjourned.